Newton famously said, if I have accomplished anything, it's been on the back of giants. And he had, I think, 1,000 or so books. And then you go forward in time to when I was a boy, we had encyclopedias, right? That made life a little bit more easy and knowledge much more accessible. Then we had Wikipedia, which really made life a lot more easy. And now we have these large language models. And so all of a sudden, you can get on the back of the shoulders of these giants almost instantaneously.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune into Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. This is Real Science Radio. I'm Fred Williams.
And I'm Doug McBurney. Fred, today we are joined by Dr. Robert J. Marks to talk about artificial intelligence, killer robots, biological weapons, and the increasingly important role of AI in modern warfare. Dr. Marks is not just a fellow at the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, which is better than a lot of fellows you might encounter. He's also a fellow member of the Body of Christ, a distinguished professor of electrical and computer engineering at Baylor, and director of the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence. He is the author of Non-Computable You, What You Can Do That Artificial Intelligence Never Will, and a timely book titled The Case for Killer Robots, Why America's Military Needs to Continue Development of Lethal AI. Dr. Marks has spent decades studying artificial intelligence, computational intelligence, and the fundamental differences between human beings and machines. He has also been an important voice in pointing out the evidence of our Creator's intelligent design and illuminating what computers can do, what they might do, and what they will never be able to do. Dr. Marks, welcome to Real Science Radio.
Well, thank you, Doug. It's good to be had.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Bob, we are absolutely thrilled to have you join us. Okay. So as Doug mentioned, your timely book, The Case for Killer Robots, it's practically prophetic with all that is going on now with modern warfare, you know, all this drone stuff that's taking center stage. And then stories like the recent article in the Wall Street Journal on AI chatbots providing users information on how to make biological weapons. But first, when people hear the term artificial intelligence, some think it's merely sophisticated computer software. Others speak as though a conscious superintelligence is about to awaken and take over the world. So what exactly is today's artificial intelligence, and what is it not?
Well, it's certainly it is computer software, but I think that people that think that it's going to magically become conscious or magically have sentience or something like that are appealing to a, I would call it a faith of something called emergentism, which is the idea of something gets so complicated, something magic's going to happen. And indeed, that's not the case. There, we do have emergence at different places, but in terms of that, in terms of artificial intelligence, no, it's the idea of emergence, again, is more of a blind faith. And it's a faith you have if you believe that we're computers made out of meat. And if you believe that we're computers made out of meat, then you got to believe that, yeah, well, silicon can replicate us and maybe surpass us. But we are more than computers made out of meat. This is the contents of my book and a lot of the things that I talk and write about. We're much more than computers, but it is nothing more than a tool. It's an incredibly powerful tool, and it's going to be very disruptive in our society. But nevertheless, it's a tool, and like any tool, it can be used for good or it can be used for bad. So,
okay. So, you know, I had never really thought that through, that if you have an evolutionary worldview, then that would naturally lead you to have a tendency to be afraid of creating something that could evolve without your input and design and maybe take over the world. But you say we're not just meat puppets. One of your books is titled A Non-Computable You.
Right.
And that title makes a fairly bold claim. Are you saying that people like me can never be digitized and uploaded and then used as like marketing fodder, or is there something else you're getting at with that title?
Okay, well, the fundamental idea is there was a Nobel Prize winner named Roger Penrose, and Penrose won the Nobel Prize, I think it was in 2020, for his work on black holes. And he worked, by the way, with Stephen Hawking. Penrose, who was not a person of faith, wrote a book which really influenced me. It was called The Emperor's New Mind. And he pointed out that computers are limited to algorithms, that is, step-by-step procedures to do something. And if there isn't a step-by-step procedure to do something, then, well, then it's non-algorithmic. It was Alan Turing in the 1930s that first proved that there were certain operations that were non-algorithmic. He could define specific problems which you could not provably solve on a computer. This was not conjecture on his part, but it was totally... It was totally mathematically proved. I mean, it was really astonishing. Since then, we've found out that there's lots of things that computers can't do, that they're non-algorithmic. So the question is, by the way, non-algorithmic, if you think of computer code, not algorithms are step-by-step procedures. So is software. All software is algorithmic, right? And therefore, if there's things which can't be done by algorithms, we need to ask the question, are there things which are inherent to the human condition that we have that are non-algorithmic? If they are non-algorithmic, then computers will never be able to capture them. And there are lots of, well, I think some obvious ones are like love, empathy, compassion, and, emotions. But more specific, and I make the case for this in the book, I would put up sentience and consciousness and understanding and creativity. Now, in all of these, a lot of people just wave their hands and they say creativity. So everybody interprets that to be exactly the way that they mean to interpret it. But no, that's not the way it should be done. You need to define your terms before you go in and you begin to say, for example, that AI doesn't understand. And so we do that in the book, and there's good evidence from computer science and science that indeed there are non-algorithmic things that are characteristic of human beings, which means that if you uploaded yourself to a computer, you could only upload the algorithmic part. And that would leave the non-algorithmic part, the love, the compassion, the empathy, etc., behind, and you would be a very boring person in that computer.
Okay.
Yeah, great point.
Well, so you bring up a subject. I don't know that I've ever heard of a classically accepted definition of creativity. Is there one that I may not be aware of? What is creativity?
Well, it turns out historically, the father of computer science, Alan Turing, defined something called the Turing test, which I don't believe really works. But I have a colleague at Rensselaer Polytechnic, Selmer Bringsjord, who came up with a very nice definition for creativity as it applies to computer. If a computer does something which is beyond the intent or the purpose of a programmer or an expert in computer science, if it does something beyond the intent or explanation, then it is creative.
Yeah.
Wow. That's okay. So, you know, since we already brought up Christianity and we broached the subject, you know, that brings to mind a Bible verse, and I would have to look it up. But when God was really angry at Israel at one point, and he was about to kick them out of the land because they had broken all the covenants, he said, "You people are doing things that it never even came into my mind to command you, like sacrificing your children to idols." He said, that never came into my mind to command you to do that.
Okay.
And so it's a negative example. I'll admit that, but it is an example that we are creative beings.
We are.
We're able to do things that the original designer and programmer never intentionally programmed into the system.
On a more positive note, how do you do the, on Selmer Bringsjord's, he called it the Lovelace test, but what about human beings? How do you determine creativity there? Penrose, and I agree with him, talks about a flash of genius. It used to be that to get the patent in the United States, you had to have a flash of genius that was in the code. It's since been gotten rid of. But what is a flash of genius? Well, it turns out there are some dramatic cases. For example, Nikola Tesla, when he came up with the induction machine, he said, I was walking by the beach, and all of a sudden it just hit me out of nowhere. It wasn't anything I was thinking of. It just hit me what the solution was. And before it went away, I smoothed out some dirt, and with a stick, I drew the schematic on the ground. And he said it was the same schematic that I presented to the IEEE. You know, you mentioned the IEEE before. Another one is Friedrich Gauss. Gauss said, I woke up and I just had this idea in my mind, and it was nothing I was thinking about. It was a flash of genius. And he said, I don't know where it came from. And we see this in the sciences a lot. We see this idea of flashes of genius. We also see it in the arts. We see it in, oh, well, here's an interesting story. Paul McCartney talks about, you know who Paul McCartney is?
Oh, yeah.
I asked my graduate class. Only half of them knew who Paul McCartney was.
You got to be kidding me.
Yeah. No. So Paul McCartney woke up and he said, you know, he had this tune running through his head. He said, my father used to listen to a lot of jazz, so I know I'd heard it before. So I went to the piano and banged out the chords. And then I thought, something as wonderful as this could not have been written before. It was such a beautiful melody. And he said, I began to shop it around to different people. He said, it was like I found a wallet with, you know, a lot of money in it. I'd go to the police, and if nobody claimed it, I would take it for myself after a week. So he shopped it around, and nobody said that they'd heard about it at all. And so he said, okay, I'll take ownership. And it was the tune to Yesterday, which was the most covered song of, for a while, it was the most covered song of all time. I think in one source I saw it was covered over 1,000 times by different artists. And so this just came to him in a flash of genius. Another one in the arts is Paul Simon. One of the most beautiful pop songs written is Bridge Over Troubled Water. He said, while I was writing this, I realized I don't usually write this good, this well. I don't know where this came from. And so I suspect I've had them. I suspect you've had them, these little flashes of genius, which seem to come out of nowhere, and they're not related to stuff you've thought about before. Now, you need your mountain of expertise to climb on to understand this flash of genius, but the flash of genius itself doesn't happen. So that's characteristic of creativity in humans, because
that's a great point. I mean, I'm still waiting to have that flash of genius.
come on, Fred.
I definitely hear what you're saying. Just thinking of, you know, you talk about songwriting, and, you know, I've done some of that. And you do have ideas pop into your head. And even solving things that, and I don't know if this is going to qualify, but sometimes as an engineer, I would solve stuff in my sleep. I'd be on some weird, hard problem, and then somehow something would come to me. But, I mean, that gets to a part where you talk about how AI doesn't have understanding. So, you know, I thought about that. And me personally, I use AI. It's been useful for things like creating images. I mean, it does such a good job, even though a lot of times you have to keep tweaking it because it's like it's not quite right. But, I mean, you can write software with it. It'll help with that. It'll helps with prose. I mean, sometimes I'll write something to somebody and I'm like, that sounds terrible. I'll use AI to improve it.
You see, so, Fred, you're an electrical engineer like me, which means that you didn't do well in English. Right? So, and so I'm the same ballpark. I write clunky prose and give it to ChatGPT and it smooths it out. And as long as it captures my thoughts and doesn't add anything, I feel totally ethical to use it.
Oh, absolutely. Same here. Yeah. So how can something behave so intelligently without actually understanding what it's doing?
Well, let me give you the classic response to that, and that's Searle's Chinese Room. There was a philosopher named John Searle who said that computers don't understand, and he offered the following story, which is really nice. Now, Searle didn't understand Chinese. He couldn't write Chinese. He couldn't read Chinese. He knew nothing about Chinese. He said, so imagine me locked up in a room with all of these file cabinets. You can tell how old it was because they used to have things called file cabinets. But in these file cabinets were a bunch of files that were placed there by computer programmers. And he said, you know, I'm sitting there and somebody slips a slip of paper through the wall. And on it is a question written in Chinese. Now, I can't read it. I don't know what it says. But I start going through the file cabinets until I find a match. And in this match, I pull out the card after I find the match. I pull out the card in the file cabinet, and underneath is the answer to that question. And so I write it down. I don't know what I'm writing. It's in Chinese. And then I refile the card, and then I go slip the sheet of paper outside the room. Now, from the outside, it sure looks whatever is on the inside understands Chinese. But it doesn't. What was he doing? He was following an algorithm. How did those file cabinets get there? They were put there by a human programmer. Now, today we have a lot more complicated things than just table lookup, which is what Cyril was talking about. We have these generative models like Grok and ChatGPT. But the premise still holds. Somebody slips a sheet of paper in. You put it into this big machine, which was trained by human beings. You turn the crank, and out pops the solution. The machine is no more than a big algorithm, and it spits out an answer, and you shove it through the door. And there's no understanding which goes on in that room. It's simply an algorithm. So I think Searle's Chinese Room about understanding is probably the best smackdown on the inability of computers to understand. Computers can add numbers like 6 and 10. It doesn't understand what the number 6 is. It doesn't understand what the number 10 is. But nevertheless, it does it.
Yeah, that's a really good example. I think that Daniel Hedrick had mentioned something like that a couple of years ago. Your explanation really made it sink in. What a great example. So, I wanted to, talking about AI, and, there's a lot of pluses with AI that, I think some people just look at it as this could be really bad, and it could be, but I think they kind of over-exaggerate it. But AI isn't inherently good or evil, is it?
No.
Yeah, and I think I heard you give a really good – I was listening to one of your interviews from a couple of years ago, and it's like how electricity, that could be good or bad. You could use it, obviously, for all the good that it does with, lights, the lights I have in my podcast room. But you could use it to electrocute someone, too.
And burn down your house with a short circuit. Yeah.
Or like with my mother-in-law, I had one of those fake beer can that had this weird label on it, so it kind of makes you curious. Well, it also had like 20,000 volts. So I had put that thing on top of a cabinet, above the cabinets. Well, she was cleaning up there, and it was when we took Ryan in to be circumcised at like 8 days old. And I come home and I see that can on the counter. I'm like, oops. My mother-in-law was like, Fred, I'm starting to not appreciate your sense of humor.
So how did you get the voltage in the can? Was it a big capacitor?
Well, it was a can from a magic shop, and so it has very little current, but it had lots of voltage. Oh. So it doesn't hurt. It shocks you, and it zzz, and it's a pretty good zing. Yeah. So I saw that can, I think, on the floor, or no, it was on the counter. I'm like, did you just drop it on the counter? She goes, no, I dropped it on the floor. And then I carefully lifted it up to the counter with both hands. Electricity could be used for good or for, pranks against your mother-in-law, which was an unintentional prank. But
it doesn't sound like she was amused at all, Fred.
She was not amused. So okay. I did want to get now to the case for killer robots. I think our audience is going to be really curious about, you wrote this book. And again, I think somewhat prophetically, because this was what I think you wrote it maybe 5 years ago. And now with this latest war going on in Iran and with the Ukraine and Russian war, all of this drone activity and the U.S. military having to adjust, because I know they're spending a lot of money to take down drones, and now they're trying to figure out a more cost-effective way to do it. So you wrote this book, and I think you say in the book that it's important for us to use AI for this type of military, these killer robots. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, absolutely. Well, first of all, I think that technology wins wars. There's no doubt about it. You go back to World War II, the Norden bomb sight, radar. We had radar, and interesting story, some of the Axis powers were really interested in how we could shoot down planes which were behind clouds. And we spread the rumor, this was a great rumor, that we were having our pilots eat more carrots. they did not want to expose the idea that they had the technology of radar. And it turned out right after Japan surrendered that radar was made public and everybody knew about radar, so it could be used at airports and other places like that. So technology wins wars, number one. And number two, we're always going to be in an arms race because of the fallen nature of man. No matter what you ban, there's going to be somebody somewhere that's going to develop artificial intelligence in order to zap you. I mean, we're seeing this with at least the premise for Iran right now. You know, we don't want them to get thermonuclear things. So this arms race is always going to be here. Let me give you an example with drones. With drones, one of the ways to get rid of drones is with an EMP explosion. Now, with an EMP explosion, that normally requires a thermonuclear bomb of sorts. But it turns out that both Russia, or all three, Russia, China, and the United States now have what I call an EMP cannon. And what EMP does is it irradiates the electronics and renders it totally inoperable. And you've heard of EMPs being exploded above the United States and all the cars quit driving and everything doesn't work anymore. So that's the same thing with drones, if you can hit them with an EMP. Now, these EMP cannons are basically devices which you can aim at a swarm of drones. And it takes them out like bug spray, right? And so you can get them all at once. And I thought that was a really interesting idea. And so this escalation is always going to occur, and it's because of the fallen nature of man. Because if I was making drones, what I would do is I would put more protection around the drones, but of course that makes it heavier and more difficult to fly. So, and then there would be another response. So you go back and forth, and there's people in the military that think about this all the time. And any hiatus that we have in the development of technology lets the other person get ahead. And again, technology wins wars, and I think even more importantly, gives people pause to engage you in war. If they know that you Yes. have powerful weapons, they're not going to come and zap you.
Yeah. And so AI would, I imagine, is going to play a really prominent role just in its ability. And again, it's algorithmic, like you said, but in maybe being quicker in certain decisions on, you know, identifying and neutralizing when drones are attacking, and in the drones themselves, you know, tracking wherever they need to go. There's already, I'm sure the Russians already have AI in their drones. I don't know for sure. I mean, obviously, we're not privy to their classified information. But so I guess that's partly where AI, we're going to have to learn to leverage it. Is that what I'm hearing?
Sure, exactly. And again, we have to overcome what the enemy does, what our adversaries do, and they will try to overcome what we do. And unfortunately, that's the nature of man. And you can have all sorts of treaties and things, but if you have somebody evil, they're not going to adhere to the treaty. Now, the only exception I know of is thermonuclear devices. We've been very successful in treaties and such to secure and not use thermonuclear devices. But that's because of mutually assured destruction, that if we use thermonuclear devices, everybody would die, and there's no winner. And so I think that that's its own reason to be hesitant about using thermonuclear, because if you use it, you're going to die too.
Yeah, exactly. So our audience may be wondering, what happened to Doug? So Doug, we were bragging about Starlink and, you know, how incredible that technology is. The one time we do that, he loses his connection. So we're continuing with the interview with Dr. Robert Marks of Baylor University. So one of the things we talked about before the show is we do an interesting fact of the week. So I'm not going to buzz you. I don't buzz my guests, but I'm going to ask you the question anyways, because you were curious as to what it was going to be. So Doug gets spared this time, but I'll be interesting. I used AI to look this one up, and I thought it was a pretty interesting one. I remembered hearing about this, but I didn't know the guy's name. And so here is the interesting fact of the week. In 1983, a Soviet warning system reported that the United States had launched 5 nuclear missiles. What Soviet officer refused to trust the computer's warning and may have helped prevent a nuclear war? What was that name?
He was an officer in the Russian army. And I remember reading this story, and I don't remember his name, though. But there's actually an interview with him on YouTube. They actually went back years later. But that story, Fred, really illustrates the importance, when all possible, to put a human in the loop.
Yeah.
Always put a human in the loop for artificial intelligence. Now, there's some cases where you can't put a human in the loop. If you have old technology where you're zapping drones one at a time, going zit, 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 things are happening so fast that a human can't track it. The military call it OODA, observe, orient, decide, and attack. And you have to have your OODA sufficiently short. If it gets too short, then the human can't handle it. And so you have to put autonomy in there. But in all cases where it makes sense to put a human in the loop, you should do it.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So I think your answer deserves this. All right. So Doug gets spared this week, but I won't spare him next week. So, you know, you talk about killer robots in your book. Now, this is beyond drones, right? I mean, are we talking Terminator, actual robots? You know, Elon Musk and Tesla, I think 5 to 10 years down the road, we're going to be seeing these robots out in people's yards mowing their yard. We're going to start seeing more of these as they start coming more into production. And so does your book, and I'll be honest, I haven't had a chance to read it. I've read a lot of synopses on it, you know, different outtakes on it. But do you get into actual killer robots beyond just drones? Because a drone is a form of robot, but are we getting into like Terminator, I'll be back, any of that kind of stuff?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that already we're using robots on the battlefield. I don't think we get them the degree of intelligence that a lot of people worry about. In the movie, for example, iRobot, which assumes that a robot becomes sentient, which is nonsense. But yeah, we're gonna have robots cleaning our rooms and mowing the lawn, and you know, I'm ready for it. What that's going to do is it's going to free us up more time. And if you look in history, technology has always freed us up to have more time. My grandparents spent a lot of time out in the fields hoeing corn and making sure the weeds were not choking the corn. And we don't have to do that anymore. We don't have to do that. My grandfather used to put up haystacks where you would stack hay over a stick and let it sit there until you needed to feed the cows. Well, that was a miserable thing to do. I went and did a few things, and you would take a pitchfork and you'd take hay and you would lift it up and it'd be hot and sweaty and you get all these seeds over you. And that was a terrible, terrible thing to do. Today we have balers, right? Which go around and they make these Tootsie Roll sort of configurations of hay. So technology has freed us up to do a lot of stuff. I'm sitting here in an air conditioning room, which didn't exist when my grandparents were born, or even my parents were born for that matter. And it's going to make life easier and free us to do more interesting, productive things.
Yeah. So this is kind of getting into the question that a lot of people ask, is AI going to take all of our jobs? And I think you've already touched on that, but maybe expound on that a little bit more. For example, if you think of just any type of career field, even just, let's say, with engineers, with what you do as a professor, do you see AI taking all of these different jobs?
I think that, getting back to this idea of algorithmic, if your job can be done by an algorithm, you have to worry. So I'm thinking about data entry sort of people. I'm thinking about truck drivers and cab drivers. And you and I were talking about self-driving cars. Self-driving cars are algorithmic, right? They run by an algorithm. But I'm also a big believer in free enterprise and the idea that this is going to create more jobs. And we see more jobs being created. My son, for example, runs a company where he has made COOs of smaller nonprofits totally unnecessary. He goes to companies and says, you don't need a CFO, a chief financial officer. I can take care of your payroll, everything in your books, and I can do it for half the price because he uses technology. So he has generated a new industry. There's other examples. One of them is, I think, kind of curious. There's lots of lawsuits now between AI companies and content creators, because the content creators are taking the AI people to court and saying, you're stealing my technology. Noam Chomsky says that AI is digital plagiarism. And in a way it is. It's kind of a digital plagiarism. So they're in court. They're battling each other. And so is there a business opportunity there? Yeah, brokers. They have brokers, which now are coming out. And these brokers, they go to the AI companies. They go to the content creators. They said, let's make a deal and we'll do brokering here. And so we see all sorts of creative things happening with AI. And I do believe that, you know, it is going to fill up. And we have to be careful to not go back to the old buggy whip factory sort of thing. You've heard of that, right? When the car came out, everybody was afraid that the buggy whip factory would go away because we wouldn't be using horses anymore. And the Luddites is another example where they came up with basically one of the first computer programs to do weaving. And the people that did weaving revolted and started destroying machineries because they didn't like the technology coming through. So those are the ones that are going to be replaced. There will be some that aren't replaced. I would imagine that commanders in the field would not be replaced. I don't think CEOs would be replaced. And I think jobs that require deep human skills, I think that jobs that require creativity. I'll give you an example. I think that CEOs and commanders in the field are often presented with scenarios and situations that they haven't seen before. And the only thing that AI can do is kind of mine past experiences and come up with responses that have been given in the past. These CEOs and these commanders in the field, when they have new situations arise, have to be creative. They have to figure out what to do. And that's not going to be replaced. So I used to think CEOs got paid too much, but now I'm not sure, at least a good CEO. So any place where there isn't an algorithmic component, where it requires things like understanding, sentience, creativity. In fact, I would say places that require love. And everybody's had a teacher, which, for example, has changed their lives. I have.
Yes. Yes.
And that's not going to be replaced by AI. That's not going to be replaced by a non-human.
Yeah.
So even the love non-algorithmic aspect is something which is not going to be touched.
Yeah, and I think of, you know, in my field, working in engineering like you, we can do a lot of things faster. And so projects that may have taken a year and a half, you might take a year or less, and then you're on to the next project. You're producing more for society. And there's going to be some other jobs that are going to pop up. I've always thought it was overblown that people think that AI is just going to take all of our jobs. Just the positives that happen with being able to do things quicker. You know, one area that I really like, and it came to a huge advantage to me, was when I was working with my father-in-law. Unfortunately passed away, but he lived a good long life while I was one of the people helping with the trust. Well, we weren't real thrilled with his lawyer. We had met with her before he passed. And she's like, you got to get with me because, you know, I know what to do with all these E-Trade accounts and all this and that. Well, ChatGPT took me through the whole thing. I didn't need to use a lawyer. And I know ChatGPT can make mistakes. These AIs can. You have to be aware of that and, you know, double check things. But we got through the entire process without hiring a lawyer and spending $10,000 for something that AI was able to do for us. So to me, there's definitely a lot of positives. Now, there's misuses, too, and I wanted to get to that. And that's this recent article in the Wall Street Journal about how this chatbot was telling people how to create biological weapons. I don't know if you had a chance to see that Wall Street Journal.
I did. You shared that with me. That's good.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on that?
I would be surprised if the chatbot didn't know how to do that for the following reason. Do you think that information was available in, I don't know, a large corpus of material, say the Library of Congress? Yeah, that was available. Now, what ChatGPT has done and what these large language models do is give us access to knowledge much quicker than we normally did. So these chatbots have been trained already on how to do this. You go back to Newton. Newton famously said, if I have accomplished anything, it's been on the back of giants. And he had, I think, 1,000 or so books. And then you go forward in time to when I was a boy, we had encyclopedias, right? That made life a little bit more easy and knowledge much more accessible. Then we had Wikipedia, which really made life a lot more easy. And now we have these large language models. And so all of a sudden, you can get on the back of the shoulders of these giants almost instantaneously. And so I was asked, for example, about large language models winning at a math Olympiad or scoring 100% on the SAT test. And I said, yeah, of course, because all of this material is in the corpus of what was trained. And it turns out these large language models have been trained on almost all of the written knowledge that's available. In fact, there's concern in the LLM, at least I heard this a year and a half ago, that we're running out of fuel to feed these people because we have looked at all of the things that are available. So when you say that, for example, how you aerosol these pathogens, for example, does that exist in a book somewhere? Well, if it exists in a book somewhere and that was subjected to training with the large language models, it would know how to do it. This ChatGPT is like a parrot, okay? It just regurgitates what it's learned. So I'm not surprised at all. Am I concerned? Yes. Surprised? No.
Yeah, exactly. I think they're taking steps to prevent responses because humans still control the AI, right? They can tell it, hey, don't let people ask how to make a biological weapon. So there's different things you can do. But yeah, you know, the large language models, all that stuff, it's making it, I'll give you an example. So for our interview, this very interview that we're having right now, we've had a couple of AI guys on in the past. They've been great shows. Well, I didn't want to repeat too much content. You know how long it would have taken me to watch all of the past AI videos we've done, and we just
have. Oh my gosh.
And so I'm like, I don't want to have Dr. Marks on and ask and have our listeners hear the same exact stuff. So I ran that through AI, and that saved me hours of time. And I'm like, okay, let's talk about some stuff that we didn't cover that much in these prior AI shows. And, you know, that's why, hey, let's talk about your book on killer robots and just begin it really timely. So, I mean, that's just one example where AI really can be useful. And I just think there's good and bad with everything. People can take AI and use it for, you know, the wrong reasons, as we saw with that Wall Street Journal article. So do you have any other thoughts as we wrap up this interview on AI, where it's heading?
Yeah, sure. I would say that your comment is well taken. And by the way, this is just the trend in technology. I don't know if you know people like Leonard Euler, Euler's equation, or Friedrich mm-hmm. Gauss, these old mathematicians. It's fun to look at their notes when they took something like the sine of 15 degrees. You would have 2 pages of calculations to figure out the sine of 15 degrees. And they would sit down and they would do this. Okay. Now, that was really time consuming, but Blaise Pascal came out with his calculator, and now we have calculators that can do the sine of 12 degrees, and boom, we get the answer like that. So the access to the knowledge has really accelerated. And so we're on a path of accelerated access to knowledge.
Yeah, which it is interesting from a biblical perspective when you think of how knowledge will greatly increase.
Yeah.
But anyways, that's a whole nother show.
And knowledge puffeth up, I think, is what it says.
Yeah, right? yeah, absolutely. So I know Doug is going to really miss having the fact to ask you a lot of questions. He had a lot of things on his mind. So we'd love to have you back, if that's okay, Dr. Marks. I mean, your expertise in this field is really, I think, stands on its own. It's you're one of the tops in this entire field of AI. It was such an honor to have you join us on Real Science Radio.
Yeah, I'm blessed to be here. So thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, so do you have a website you'd like us to share with our viewers and radio audience?
I'm the director of Discovery Institute. Discovery Institute is an awesome organization, if you're familiar with it.
Oh, absolutely. But, you're the director of the, really?
Now, the Discovery Institute has a lot of different centers, if you will. And the biggest one is associated with ID. Okay. And that's Steve Myers' effort.
Yeah.
And I had the Bradley Center for Discovery Institute, the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence. And our website is mindmatters.ai. Now, politicians say when they give websites, you should give it 3 times. So I'm going to repeat it twice, okay? So it's mindmatters.ai, mindmatters.ai. There you will see a lot of articles which are sympathetic to my point of view, and also some podcasts and a few videos and things of that sort. So,
yeah, okay.
Mindmatters.ai.
Mind matters, not AI. Yeah, now that's five times. And if you okay. watch the video, obviously we're showing it on the screen, and we'll link to it from our website as well.
Okay, and, great.
Yeah, we'll definitely love to have you on again. It was such an honor again, Dr. Robert Marks, Baylor University Distinguished Professor. So for Dr. Marks, I'm Fred Williams of Real Science Radio. May God bless you.